Hey, good morning to you. My name is Rob. I'm one of the pastors at Next Level Church, and so honored that you guys would worship with us today. If this is your first time with us, I want to let you know that we try to help everything in your church experience go to the next level, and that includes a sermon. And one way that we've done that is we've partnered with a free app called YouVersion. If you're new, you can download it. The steps are up on the screen. And in there for you, there's a poll this week. There's a question of the week. There's also all the verses that we're going to cover. There's a place for you to take notes, and you can actually email the notes to yourself so you can remember them at a later date. So take a second to download YouVersion, or if you're a regular attender, open up YouVersion and start following along. Well, how many of you guys would say that you fully understand prayer? You fully understand prayer. Raise your hands if you fully understand prayer. Okay. Now, since none of us fully understand prayer, let me ask you a second question. How many of you have ever done an in-depth study on prayer? An in-depth study, an exhaustive study on prayer. So three and a half of us. You might have been scratching your eye. I don't know. Three and a half of us. So I think this is something that's very interesting, that in a room full of people that are going to church, probably a lot of us are Christians or Christ followers, we would say that, okay, we don't fully understand this thing called prayer, and yet, for some reason, we haven't done any research on our own to try to figure it out. I bet most of you would say, you know what, I think prayer is important, I think prayer is powerful, but I'm a little scared of it. Or maybe you would say, I want to pray, but I just don't know how. I think for the vast majority of us, we treat prayer like it's a microwave, when it should be an atomic bomb. I want to explain this just for a second. When I got my microwave in my house, I did not read the instruction manual on it at all. I simply put it on a counter, took the plug out, I put it into the wall, then I started hitting some buttons, and I figured out how to set the time, and then I started nuking things, and that was it. I didn't Google how to run a microwave. I didn't ask a friend how to run a microwave. I just kind of took it for what it is. Plug and play. Microwave. Simple. I don't understand how it works. I don't understand how it uses radiation, and yet it doesn't give me cancer, but I love the microwave. And after a few attempts of using it, I figured out the perfect time to pop microwavable popcorn. Now, I want to say something real quickly about microwave popcorn. When I say I figured out the perfect time, that does not mean that I know how to pop every kernel in a bag of popcorn. That is impossible. Let's not get crazy here. What I am saying that after messing with the microwave, I figured out how to pop popcorn in that perfect balance between having a few kernels left unpopped and it being burnt. And it takes some work. It takes some effort. But I don't really understand the microwave, and I don't do a lot of research on it, and I don't really care to. It's a microwave, and that's how most of us treat prayer, when in reality, prayer is like an atomic bomb. And if I were given an atomic bomb and had to work with an atomic bomb, you best believe I would be reading the instruction manual. I'd be reading every word. I'd be reading it again, and then I would phone a friend. I would call some of my friends who are rocket scientists and say, how do I not blow myself up? Give me some advice here. What do I do? And then after that, I would go to the internet and I would Google atomic bombs. And I would go to Wikipedia and I would pray to God that Wikipedia had been updated correctly and gave me the right information. And then after that, I would go back to the instruction manual to make sure that I understood this thing, this atomic bomb. Why? Because it's huge, it's powerful, it's explosive. Prayer is the ability to come before the God of the universe and talk to Him, and for some reason He listens. That is mind-blowing. Prayer is powerful. It should not just be something that we're like, yeah, you know, it's my microwave. It's just there. When I need it, I'll use it. No. We should be realizing that prayer is an atomic bomb. It is powerful. It is something that we should be doing some research on. It's something that we should be asking questions about, and it's something that we should be experiencing. And so we're kicking off today a brand new series entitled, Dear God, Why Don't You Answer My Prayers? And I hope that in this series, we're going to learn how to pray. But more specifically, what we're going to do is we're going to look at some verses in the Bible that talk about why God is not answering your prayers. And I hope this is going to be helpful for you, because some of you, you've come here today and you've said, okay, the reason I don't pray is because I gave it one shot. I asked God to do something and He didn't work. And so therefore, I'm a little bit hurt by prayer. I'm a little bit upset by prayer. I'm even a little bit mad at God. And maybe for you, it was a relative was on their deathbed and you said, God, I've never asked you for anything, but I'm begging you to not let them die. And they died anyway. And so it put a bad taste in your mouth. Or maybe it's for you, you have a desire to have kids and you've prayed, God, would you give us this desire? We want to have kids. And God hasn't answered your prayer. And so you're like, okay, I'm just done. I'm done with prayer. But I would challenge you that you need to do some more research. This is an atomic bomb. This isn't one thing that you just attempt one time. You've got to carefully engage this thing called prayer. And so that's what we're going to do today. And I want to give a little bit of context from our verses today. Our text is coming from the book of James. And James is the author, and he was a pastor in the early church. He was one of the first pastors to some of the first Christians. A lot of the people in his church actually had a relationship with Jesus. They might have known Jesus or at least seen Jesus preach. And James is their pastor. Now, something that is really important about this is that James knows a thing or two about prayer. And the reason he knows a thing or two about prayer is, number one, he was raised in a Jewish household. In a Jewish household, in a traditional Jewish household, it's very different than maybe your upbringing. Maybe you didn't grow up praying. Maybe no one ever taught you how to pray. And so you don't pray because you don't know what to say. Or maybe for you, prayer was just some simple little phrases. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. But there's no power in your prayers. You're not asking God for any of the big things in life. And that would not have been the case for James. James grew up in a Jewish household where he saw prayer modeled. He went to a synagogue where he saw the rabbi teach about prayer and talk about prayer. So prayer would have been a part of his life. But the second thing that makes James an expert on prayer is that he is Jesus's younger brother. So not only did he grow up learning about prayer, he saw his brother praying in a new way, in a way that had not been done before. And he got to see it firsthand. Now, this is just a little free, little icing on the cake here. James actually did not believe in Jesus when he was living on this earth. I think that's pretty fascinating. And before we cast stones at James, I want us to think about it like this. James did not realize that Jesus was claiming to be the Son of God till Jesus was 33 years old. And if you have a sibling, an older sibling, just imagine that you've lived your whole life with them, and at the age of 30, they come out and they say, I am the Son of God. You would think they're cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Like, you would not. Now, I've seen you pick your nose. There is no way you're the Son of God. Like, you've gotten on my nerves before. Like, no, there's no way. And so James and all of Jesus' brothers and sisters thought that Jesus was just crazy. They thought he was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. But something happened that totally changed their perception of Jesus. He died, and he didn't stay dead. 3 days later, he rose from the grave, and it kind of forced them to say, you know what? Maybe our older brother wasn't crazy after all. Maybe there was something to this. And so they put their faith in him. And James goes from being a skeptic to being a leader in the new church. And he preaches and he teaches and he helps raise up a new generation to follow after his older brother Jesus. And in that church, there were some issues with prayer. There were some people that didn't understand prayer, that didn't do the research, that didn't know that prayer was like an atomic bomb. And so with that understanding, let's dive into our text for today. James writes, "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God." Let's stop there just for a second, because James asks an important question. And the question is, what causes quarrels among you? What causes fights? And I want you to take just a second to think about, what was the last thing that you fought about? What was the last thing that made you angry? What was the last thing that irked your nerves, that caused you to fuss at someone, that caused your blood pressure to rise, caused the steam to come out of your ears? What was the last thing? What was the last thing that made you angry? I am guessing that for the vast majority of us in here, the last thing that made us angry wasn't something righteous, like the fact that every day thousands of kids die of the AIDS virus. I'm betting that the vast majority of us weren't really ticked off because every single day 250,000 people die of hunger. I don't think those were the things that caused us frustration or anger. I think the things that caused most of you anger this week was the fact that you had to sit in traffic on 64. Or the thing that caused you anger is that you went to a restaurant and they didn't give you good service. How dare you? Or your spouse didn't meet your needs and didn't respond the way that you think they should have responded. Or your kids didn't move quickly enough. And there was something that someone did against you that caused you frustration. And I want to make sure that you hear this. Anger is not a sin. It is a God-given emotion that he's given to us. We are called, actually, to get angry about things that matter. The problem with our anger is that we get angry about things that don't matter. And James is saying, what is causing that anger in you? What is causing you to fight with your fellow humans? It is this selfish desire inside. It comes from within. I remember back near the beginning of my high school career, I was in my parents' minivan. My dad was driving. I was sitting in the middle seat, and we were waiting for my mom to come out of a store. My dad says to me, "Rob, it's the end of the summertime with school starting in a couple weeks. I would like to take you to JCPenney to get some slacks." No, he didn't. I said, "Dad, first of all, I do not wear slacks. And second of all, I will not be going to JCPenney." And I went level 10 on my dad. I started fussing at him. I don't even know if he remembers this, but like, I am like yelling at my dad because he called him slacks and he said something about JCPenney. Now, what my dad did not understand was that the year before, a new kid joined our class. He had moved to America from England. His name was David King, and he dressed really, really cool. At the time, I wore a Lakers t-shirt and black pants every single day to school. And I'm around this guy named David King, and I'm like, man, he dresses so cool. And one day I went to the mall with him, and I saw that he shops at these stores I'd never heard of, these crazy places like The Gap and American Eagle. And so I had been kind of holding on to this insecurity inside of me of looking at David and saying, you know what, I don't look as good as him. I don't dress like him. And I was holding on to this insecurity. And so then when my dad, how dare he say the word slacks, I went off on him. No, they're not called slacks, Dad. They're jeans. And this whole thing is so ridiculous and it's so silly, but I bet you if you were to talk about the last thing that made you angry, it would be just as silly. What are we so angry about? We're angry because we didn't get our way. We are angry because we're insecure. We're angry because we look at Facebook and we see a picture of someone having fun and we say, how come they didn't invite me? I'm angry. They should have called me. We get angry because we look on Instagram and we see a couple together and they're always smiling and we say, how come my relationship isn't like that? Or how come God hasn't even given me a relationship like that? Or we see tweets on Twitter about how cute a couple's kids are and we say, God, I don't even like my kids. How come I can't tweet about this stuff? And it makes us mad. It makes us angry. We look at other people. We don't have what they have and it causes us to fight with others. And James is making a point here that anger that's coming out, it is selfishness. What causes you to fight with others? It's not a righteous anger from God. It is a selfish anger that comes from within. I believe that at the heart of every conflict is the unwillingness to put someone first. At the heart of every conflict is the unwillingness to put someone first. The reason you are mad at your spouse is not because your spouse left the dishes in the sink for the 100th time and didn't put them in the dishwasher. The reason you're angry with your spouse is because they're not doing what you asked them to do. It is a selfish thing that comes from within. You fight, you quarrel, you say, why can't you do this? It's so easy for me to do it. Why aren't you doing it? So we fight and we quarrel and we yell and we fuss. And James would say, listen, that anger is coming from a selfish place. It's coming from a place that doesn't represent God. You are quarreling, you are fighting with people because ultimately you are selfish. And that's a great point, but that's not James's main point, because then James transitions and says, not only are you fighting and quarreling out of selfishness, but that selfishness is causing God not to answer your prayers. And this is why. And I want to show you two reasons that James says God is not answering your prayers. The first one is simply this: you don't have because you don't pray. James says, what causes fights and quarrels amongst you? Well, you don't have because you don't ask God. And some of you here today don't have what you want because you simply have never asked God for it. And ultimately, James says, the reason that you haven't asked God for something is because you're selfish. You rely on yourself. You say, I'm a self-made man. I'm a self-made woman. I worked hard. I can work hard. I can get that promotion. I can get that relationship. I can fix this addiction. We look at ourselves and we say, I can do it on my own. So it causes us not to pray to God. And ultimately, it is a selfish thing. You can tell the people that are fully relying on God are oftentimes the most humble because they've had to step out of their own way. And they've had to say, okay, God, everything in me wants to do this on my own, but I'm going to humble myself and come before you. I'm going to ask that you help me in this situation. And James would say, what causes those fights? What causes those quarrels? What causes you to fight with other human beings? It's this selfishness. And ultimately, it's that selfishness that is causing you not to ask God for things. Now, some of you, I bet, are starting to kind of push back and say, no. The reason I don't pray has nothing to do with selfishness. I don't pray because no one's ever taught me how to pray. And I'm nervous. What if I say the wrong thing and God nukes me? Or what if I make God mad? Like, I don't know what to say to God. And so that is the reason why a lot of you say you would not pray. And I hear that excuse, but I would say that it's not a very valid excuse. And the reason is from a quote that maybe some of you heard. It's a pretty old quote. And it says, there are no atheists in foxholes. There are no atheists in foxholes. And basically what that quote is saying, it is this picture of in the military, there are, during wars like Vietnam War or World War II, they would dig these foxholes and the soldiers would be in the hole that they dug and there's bullets flying over their head and there's bombs going off and even an atheist who is sitting there that might lose their life finds God. Translation, when you really need God, you'll figure out how to pray. Last week, my wife and I were watching the news, and there was a shooting that ended up killing a young kid, and they interviewed someone in the news, and the person they interviewed said, I'm not a praying person, but when I saw them fall down, when I heard the gunshots, I started praying to God. Why? Because when you desperately need God, you'll find a way to pray. I love the quote by the great American theologian, Al Pacino. He once said, I asked God for a bike, but I know God doesn't work that way. So I stole a bike and asked for forgiveness. Just in case you're not tracking along, Al Pacino is not a theologian. He is an actor. He played Scarface and The Godfather. He will cut you, and he does not understand how God works. But that quote is how most of us live. God, I need something, but I'm afraid you're not going to answer my prayer, so I'm just going to do it myself. God, I really want that promotion, but I'm afraid you might say no, and so I'm just going to go out there and take the reins, and I'm going to get her done. God, I know I should be praying, but I'm going to do what I want to do to get what I want. When we don't pray, it shows we overestimate our abilities, and we underestimate the power of prayer. Ultimately, the reason you don't pray is because you overestimate yourself. You think you can do it. And ultimately, that is a selfish thing to say, I'm in control. Even though, God, you're big, even though, God, you're powerful, I am not going to rely on you. I'm going to rely on myself. That is selfish. And we overestimate our abilities and we underestimate the power of God. And so James would say, hey, listen, some of you, the reason you don't have from God is because God's simply waiting for you to ask. Isn't that a crazy thought? That maybe the reason you don't have that promotion or you don't have that desire of your heart is because you simply haven't asked God. And James would say the reason you haven't asked is because you're relying on your own strength and you're being selfish. But James isn't done there. James goes on to give us a second point. And actually, before we get into that, I almost jumped ahead. I don't want to, because I want to show you a couple of prayers that I pray on a regular basis that actually help me to not be so selfish. And I think that all of us in here need to do some self-evaluation. I think we need to be looking ourselves in the mirror and doing some self-reflection. I want you to hear that when I say that you are being selfish, when James is saying you are being selfish by not praying, I'm not casting stones at you. I am looking at myself. I am a selfish human being. And the reason that I don't pray at times is because I'm selfish. And so I want to share with you a handful of prayers that I pray on a regular basis to help me get my eyes off of myself. The first one is simply, God, help me love my spouse the way you love me. God, help me love my spouse the way that you love me. Specifically, what I pray on a weekly basis is, God, help me love Monica the way that you love me. Monica, in case you didn't know, is my wife, not just some random person. God, help me love Monica the way that you love me. Now, I want to tell you why this is such an important prayer for me. It is not because my wife is hard to love. My wife is amazing. In fact, when young guys ask me, what's your advice about marriage? Who should I be looking for? What should I do about a relationship? The advice that I always give to guys is find a wife that is like Monica and marry her. It'll make your life so much better. My wife is incredible. So I don't pray this prayer because there's something wrong with her. I pray this prayer because there's something wrong with me. I'm incredibly selfish. And so often, I want to react based off how I perceive Monica to be treating me. But what I need to be doing is I need to be loving Monica the way that God has loved me. And so a prayer that I pray is, God, you've loved me well. You loved me when I was at my worst. You loved me when I disrespected you. You loved me when I was selfish. You loved me in spite of myself. So help me love Monica like you have loved me. It's a prayer that I pray on a weekly basis, and I invite you to pray it as well. A second prayer that I pray is, God, soften my heart. God, soften my heart. I don't fully understand the heart or the spiritual aspects of the heart, but what I do know is that all throughout the Bible, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, there's this idea that our hearts can become spiritually hard. And specifically, the first time I remember reading about that is in the story of Pharaoh versus Moses. And if you guys remember the story, if you grew up in church, maybe you're familiar with it, but God tells Moses to go to Israel and to tell Pharaoh, let my people go. And he tells him that, and Pharaoh says, okay, they can go. And then the next day he changes his mind, and the Bible says that his heart becomes hard. Literally, he starts rejecting what God is saying to him, and he can no longer hear it, and he tells God, no. And I think there are instances when we can resist God so much that we become calloused, that our heart becomes hard. And I think we can tell those is when we experience a worship set like we just experienced and we're not moved by it. Maybe it's because our hearts have become hard against God. And so a prayer that I pray often is, God, would you soften my heart? Would you help me to be sensitive to what you're doing? Would you speak to me? Would you help me not to resist you? Because I'm so selfish that I'll spend my entire day thinking about myself and thinking about my schedule and thinking about what I have to do that I will forget about you. So would you soften my heart? Would you help me not to resist what you're trying to do through me? A third thing that I pray on a regular basis is, God, set a fire in my heart. God, set a fire in my heart. If you have been a Christian for any amount of time, then most likely you've experienced that there are times when God feels really close to you. And there are other times when God feels really distant. And I don't really know what happens, but I don't think that it's because God has left us or because God has moved. I think it's because we've moved. We've done something. So there are times in my life when I don't feel God's presence, when I just say, hey, God, would you set my heart on fire? And I often, when I pray a prayer like that, I kind of laugh. And I hope that God does not take me literally, because I don't want heartburn in that prayer. I want God to spiritually, that was a joke, ba-dum-ching, help me out here. There you go. What I'm praying is I want God to give me a passion for Him. I don't want to just live this life and go through the motions. I don't want to just check things off. Yep, I prayed. Yep, I read my Bible. Yep, I went to church. Ho-hum, now I'm going to live my life for me. No, I want to passionately pursue God because He's passionately pursued me. So I just pray, God, would you set my heart on fire? Would you turn it to you? Would you help me to desire you? Would you set my heart on fire? Last thing that I pray on a regular basis is, God, give me opportunities to tell others about you. God, give me opportunities to tell others about you. We cannot force another human being to fall in love with God. It doesn't matter how good we are at telling people about Jesus. It doesn't matter how well we love people. We can't force another human being to accept God. All we can do is tell them. And so in my life, the thing that I pray often is, God, would you give me opportunities to tell others about you? God, today I've got to go to the store, and that store is called Walmart, and it's basically hell on earth. And while I'm in Walmart, and I'm standing at the back of the store because I'm in line because they only have 2 checkouts open, even though there's 47 in the store, God, I'm going to get really angry, and I'm going to get really upset, and I'm going to get really frustrated, and I'm not going to notice that the cashier is hurting on the other side of the cash register. And God, I'm going to be so focused on myself that I'm not going to even ask them how they're doing. And God, I might miss an opportunity to show someone's God's love. So would you give me opportunities to tell other people about you? God, I don't know what you'll do. I don't know if they'll accept you. I don't know if they'll punch me in the face. I don't know if they'll laugh at me. But I'm just asking that you would help me to stop thinking about myself long enough that I could tell someone else about you. And so those are some prayers that I pray. And they are prayers that I pray because I'm introspective, because I look at my life and I see how selfish I am. And I don't want to be one of the people that James is talking to that says, hey man, God's not answering your prayers because you're not praying. And so I pray these prayers and hope that God moves. But James isn't done with us from there. He then goes to the second reason why God doesn't answer our prayers. Look at it with me. It's going to come on the screen. James chapter 4, verses 3 through 6. He says, when you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. You adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world means enmity against God? Therefore, anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. Or do you think, Scripture says without a reason, that he jealously longs for the Spirit he caused to dwell in us? But he gives us more grace. That is why scripture says God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. This is one of the many reasons why I love James. He is so blunt. He is so straight to the point. I don't have to have a seminary degree to figure out what James is saying. He just laid the smack down on our Rudy Poos. Can you smell what the James is cooking? This is straight to the point. He's saying, listen, I want you to get something here. There's no mystery here. There's no praying about what this verse means. There's no asking a scholar. This is simple stuff that I want every single one of you to get. And what is the point? James says that some of you don't have from God because you simply aren't asking. But others of you, God is saying no to your prayers because when you pray, you're praying with the wrong motives. And what are the wrong motives? That God would just bless you. Does God want us to ask Him for things? Yes. I believe He does. Does God want you to ask for that promotion? Yes. Does God want you to ask for a spouse? Yes. Does God want you to ask for that raise at work? Yes. I believe God wants you to ask Him for things. But for far too many of us, the only time we talk to God is when we ask Him for something that we can spend on ourselves. And I don't know if this is something that you do or not. But for me, I often like to try to think about the way that I treat God as a way that I would treat someone that I love. And in the people that I love, if the only time they came and talked to me was because they needed something, I wouldn't feel like we had a relationship. Oh God, I haven't talked to you in a few weeks, but I really want that promotion. God, I haven't talked to you in a few months, but I really like that house that's on sale that we put a bid on. God, I know I've been really busy with myself, and I haven't even thought to talk to you in 2 days, but would you do this for me? How would you feel if someone in your life only came to you when they needed something? How would you feel if your kids, the only time they ever talked to you was when they asked you to give them something? And some of you are thinking, well, I have teenagers. That is the only time they talk to me, but for the rest of us, how would you like it if your kids, hey dad, give me some more money. Hey dad, can you take me here? Hey dad, I don't really want to spend time with you. I just want to use you to get what I can get out of you. And James is saying that some of you, listen, some of you are praying, but you are praying out of selfish motives. You are just asking God to bless you. You're just asking God to further your kingdom. You're just asking God to give you something, and you're not taking any time to actually get to know God. God is this incredible being. In fact, James says that he is a jealous God. He envies intensely the spirit that lives in us. Can you just even fathom this for a second? That the God of the universe is sitting on the edge of his seat saying, I hope they talk to me today. Man, they're up. They woke up. I hope they acknowledge me. Nope. They're going to have breakfast. Well, maybe lunchtime. By lunchtime, they're going to say hi to me. Nope. They're busy checking off things. Well, they got to drive to work. I'm going to put them on 64 and make them be stuck in traffic for a little while. Maybe they'll acknowledge me. Nope. They just listen to the radio. What would happen if instead of simply looking at prayer as a way to get things from God, we started looking at it as a way to have a relationship with God? I think that is James' point, that James is calling us and challenging us. Listen, you should pray. You should ask God for things, but that shouldn't be the only thing you talk to God about. God is a jealous being. And some of you are like, wait a second, that kind of sounds high maintenance. God being jealous, I don't know if I want anything to do with that God. But we need to understand something real quickly. That idea of jealousy is different than the idea of jealousy over a boyfriend or girlfriend. It is kind of like this. If I were to show jealousy because my wife went to Walmart, and I've talked a lot about Walmart today. I'm really sorry. I have no idea why it's on my mind. But if my wife went to Walmart and she said she was going to be back by 2:30 and she's back by 2:40, if I drilled her when she came in the house and said, why were you 10 minutes late? Who were you flirting with? I know you're having an affair on me. I could tell. And my wife would probably respond, hey, have you ever seen the people at Walmart? I was not cheating on you. Back off. But that type of jealousy is the wrong kind of jealousy. That type where you're just looking for an excuse to pick a fight that you don't trust the person you're in love with. No, this is a jealousy that longs for time and attention. It would be like if my wife went on a trip for a couple days, that I am jealous that I can't spend time with her, that I am longing for her to come back. And when she comes back, I hope that she's excited to see me, and I hope that she wants to spend some time with me. And that is the same type of jealousy that God shows towards you. He doesn't want just to hear when you need Him. He wants to be a part. He wants to be a part of your life. One of the things that I am amazed at throughout the Bible is there are tons of examples of prayer. And if you ever do a read through the New Testament, specifically through some of Paul's letters, at almost every single letter that Paul writes to the church, it starts off with this incredible prayer. And it is a great example for us. If you're sitting here and you're scratching your head, you're saying, I don't know how to pray, go to Paul, look at what he prays. And I think it's incredible because when you look at the examples of prayer in the New Testament, they focus more on developing spiritual qualities than personal gain. Ultimately, the prayers that you read about in the Bible are about being in the presence of God. God, help me to be more like You, not just God, give me something. In our prayers, James would say to us, he said, hey, listen, some of you aren't getting answers to your prayers because you're just not praying. Try it. Ask God for something. And James would say, others of you, God is saying no because you're praying with the wrong motives. You're praying selfishly. The only time you're talking to God is because you're asking Him for something. Something that you can benefit yourself with, but not something that is good for the kingdom of God. What if we started off our day, every single day, with simply saying, good morning, God. God, I've been asleep for 6 or 7 hours now, but I know that You don't sleep or slumber. So I just wanted, first thing now that my eyes are open, I just wanted to say hi. Good morning, God. And what if from there we just kind of gave Him our day? God, you know, I've got a meeting today and I am a little bit nervous. I'm a little bit scared. Would You give me some confidence going into this meeting? And the reason I'm scared is because there might be some conflict and I don't know what to say. Would You give me some wisdom in this meeting? Would You help me to find favor in the meeting? And God, now I'm thinking about my kids, and my kids have to go to school today. And God, I just want to take a minute to thank You that You've given me kids. Thank You so much for them. But God, I'm also a little bit nervous that they're going to go to school and they're going to be influenced in negative ways. Would You protect my kids? Would You help them make wise choices? Would You protect them from temptation? And God, man, I'm laying here next to an incredible woman. Thank You so much for her. God, thank You for bringing her into my life. God, would You help me love Monica like You love me? God, I don't want to just spend this time just asking You for things. I'm just going to spend 2 minutes just thanking You for things. God, thank You for this house. Thank You that You gave me a car. Thank You for my friends. God, thank You. What would happen if we started treating our relationship with God like we actually cared about Him? And not like He was a genie in heaven just waiting to grant us our wishes. Ultimately, what I hope you're hearing from here is that we are called and asked to ask God for things. This church, these seats that you're sitting on, is an answer to prayer. If you're new to the scene, or maybe this is your first time with us, we spent as a church 2 years asking God to give us a church building fully furnished for free. We asked God for that. And God gave it to us. He actually answered a prayer. And I hope that every time you walk into these doors, you do not take this for granted. This is a miracle of biblical proportions. This is the sign that you are looking for. Does God answer prayers? Yes. And does God want to answer your prayers? Yes. But in that 2-year period of asking God to give us a church, that wasn't the only thing we said to God. We didn't just say, God, we're only going to love You if You give us a church. God, please give us a church. That's all we can think about. No, you spent time and we thank God for things. We spent God and we said, hey, give us Your presence. And even if You don't give us a church, help us to be fully satisfied in You. It is a relationship with God that He desires. And the Spirit of God envies intensely when you ignore Him throughout the week. How different would your life be if you had a relationship with God and not just a wish list? Today, the application, if you're looking for some, maybe you want to write this down, it's simply to pray to God and not just for God to do stuff for you. Pray to God and not just for God to do stuff for you. Hopefully what I'm hoping that you're hearing is that there are 2 reasons James gives us why he's not answering your prayers. Number one is because you're not praying, and you're not praying because you're being selfish, you're relying on yourself. And number two is that God's not answering your prayer because when you do pray, it's simply for you to spend it on yourself. And we can change that. The answer is to go to God, to have a relationship with Him, to pray, to talk to Him. Yeah, we ask Him for things, but we also have a relationship. We thank Him for things. We give Him our day. We give Him our fears. We talk to Him. And I think it would radically transform your prayer life if you started praying to God and not just for God to give you stuff. So this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to end. I'm going to give you a chance to talk to God. And I don't know what you need to say, but I'm just going to give you a chance to simply be still and silent and talk to Him. I'm not going to pray for you. I'm not going to give you the words to say. I'm just going to give you a chance to close your eyes, to bow your heads, and to have a conversation with God. And maybe some of you here do need to ask Him for something. Maybe you need to ask Him to move in your heart because you have a hard heart and you are resisting His Spirit and you don't feel Him. Maybe some of you need to pray for a person in your life that doesn't know God and you need to ask God to move in their life. I don't know what you need to pray, but this series is not just about learning how to pray. It's actually experiencing it. So I want to give you guys a few moments just to close your eyes, bow your heads, and talk to God. Would you guys do that now?